All right, welcome back to Buffalo Bread Podcast. We are in week 15, and it is the formal battle for the AFC East, which I don't know if anybody on the outset of the season would have believed that this would be the case, where the New England Patriots are first in the entire AFC conference, and the Bills are going to their house for a matchup to see if they can split the series. How are you boys doing? Dan, who do we have with us?
JJ, I'm very excited to welcome our resident Patriots expert, Brandon Bennett, back to the pod. Brandon, it's been a few weeks since you were on, talking all this wonderful, optimistic stuff about your turnaround Patriots here, first in the AFC East, competing for first in the AFC conference, as JJ said. How have you been doing the past couple of weeks, man, other than enjoying a luxurious winning streak from your boys?
I've been doing really well. Luxurious is a good.
I hate the way you said that. Can you lower the smugness when you say I'm doing really well?
Oh man, aggressive win streak. You know, however you want to characterize it. I'm doing really well, and I appreciate you having me back in this most timely of moments.
This is a very timely moment, because as JJ mentioned. I mean, this is it, man. This is like t-shirt and hat party for you guys if you knock off the Bills this Sunday. So we got a big one at a non-flexed 1 p.m. start, which I'm a little bit surprised about. And we're going to talk about the magnitude of this game, but we do have 1 p.m. meaningful football here being played in week 15. I mean, here's where it's at, and it's a pretty simple scenario. The Pats will outright clinch the AFC East with a win against the Buffalo Bills. They're coming off a bye week. They're coming off a, how many games in a row is it? Is it 9, Brandon?
The win streak?
Is it 9? Yeah.
It's, I believe, 11. Is it not?
It's 11 games a tier. God, man, 11 games in a row. That is wild. So there is a lot to unpack. Big implications. But also, I would argue that both of these two teams, scarily for you guys, hopefully for us, are different in a better way than when they first faced each other in week 5. And we can get into some of that too. But overall, Brandon, you're the guest. We're going to let you lead in here. Real quick, from the Patriots fan point of view, what are some things you think Bills fans should generally keep an eye out for as we watch the Patriots take on our squad this week?
Yeah, so I think something to keep an eye on, which, you know, I think Bills fans are naturally and organically going to do anyway, is what Stephon Diggs does on the field. He's been relatively quiet since the return of Kayshon Boutte back on the field. But I feel as though what we saw the last time New England played the Bills from Diggs specifically was, you know, I think surprising for a lot of folks with Diggs coming off the injury. I think the other thing, too, is that Ramondre Stevenson is getting healthier. The Bills have not been that great at stopping the run. So I think we're going to see a two-headed monster between Ramondre and Travion Henderson. From a fantasy perspective, I have my fingers crossed for Henderson. I got my money there. So I'm hoping to see Ramondre more so in the pass protection role and Travion more in the pass catching downs. Getting those PPR points for me. But that is what I'm going to be looking for. So
those are both, I think, very, very in line with what I'm looking for too, particularly on the offensive side of the ball for you guys. And also scary in the way that I don't know the Bills have a lot of answers for that. JJ, Stephon Diggs has been lining up in the slot for the New England Patriots. I want to say I saw a stat today earlier on when I was prepping for this. It's like 68% of the time, 69%. It's a pretty high rate. And you and I have been watching Taron Johnson, God love him, age before our eyes this season. How concerned are you that Diggs is going to be matched up frequently against Taron Johnson?
Terrified, because I think that, frankly, we know what kind of player Stephon Diggs can be. He may have been quiet, but he's the kind of player that for 4 years with the Bills, we saw he'd kind of have some lulls for a couple games during a season, and then he'd pop off for 8 catches and 2 touchdowns, right? And so it's the kind of thing that, as a Bills fan and having watched him during, you know, the better part, the prime of his career, I'm worried this is one of those pop-off times because Taron Johnson has struggled, as you've mentioned, and anybody that they've tried to line up in the slot has really kind of struggled, even in Taron Johnson's absence. So it has been a pain point for this defense. The passing defense for the Bills has actually been pretty solid overall throughout the measure of the season, and their rushing defense over the past three weeks has been top five in the league. And so that is a change that hopefully will carry into this one. And that has been mostly because of the change at linebacker from Terrell Bernard to Shaq Thompson. So
our Lord and Savior. Yes.
Yeah, he's really come on in a real big way. But yeah, from the slot, I'm very, very worried about Stephon Diggs because I think that, you know, Christian Benford has shown up and shown that maybe early in the season, his struggles were more injury related than talent related. And on the outside, mixing in Maxwell Hairston and Tre'Davious White actually looking pretty solid. I feel a little bit better about our outside corners and safeties especially, but, you know, that slot is a real worry. And then, again, just as you mentioned, Travion Henderson has looked like he's come on as an excellent rookie. And the Bills' run defense, though it has been very good, I don't know that the overall tackling issues, and you know, we've seen a much bigger sample size in the Sean McDermott era of them being very suspect in rush defense.
Oh, 100%. And Henderson, he's like a missed tackle machine. I think he's got a missed tackle rate of 21.8% this season, and we know that the Buffalo Bills struggle just generally tackling in space, right? This is a game, JJ, where I worry that our beloved All-Pro Poe is going to get caught like getting faked out of his cleats by someone like Henderson in open space. And it's just going to be a reminder of where some of our vulnerabilities are. Brandon, I want to kick it back to you real quick because I mentioned the term vulnerability and I am the transition king. You guys will be without Will Campbell on this offensive line. But even when Campbell was in, Drake May has kind of suffered through like a top seven pressure rate from opposing defenses, even when your offensive line was fully healthy. It looks like the Bills are going to get Joey Bosa back. Greg Rousseau, who is the most invisible $20 million man in the NFL, has picked moments against the Patriots where he's decided he wants to play to the full effect of a 6'8 frame. Do you have any concerns with this offensive line being able to protect Drake May against a depleted, maybe not so effective, but still kind of feisty and fiery Buffalo Bills pass rush?
I think you're kind of hitting the nail on the head as to what are the necessary ingredients for the Bills to win this game. I think they're going to have to make May, you know, leak out of the pocket, put pressure, because if you give him any amount of time, you know, with that arm, his accuracy, he's going to find an open man. So it does concern me because I think if the Bills are going to walk away with a win on the road for this game, it's going to be because Drake May can't get the ball out.
Yeah. And JJ, we love talking about big fat dudes moving other big fat dudes when it comes to trench play on this pod. For me, I think it's the edges, as we were just discussing. But Drake May, and listen, you are the technician, so you feel free to correct anything I'm about to tee you up with. Drake May, in the way he climbs in the pocket, I've never seen a second-year QB with that kind of pocket discipline. He loves to keep his eyes downfield, and when he feels edge pressure coming, he just preternaturally steps up in the pocket. What I saw since he start to do, though, and what I saw a lot in the New York Giants game, was that they were running stunts with their edges. They were bringing in kind of like this mushy-looking blitz scenario where it looks like you had a linebacker as a spy, but then he was coming in a delayed blitz on the middle, basically to take advantage of Drake May stepping up in the pocket in the way that he does and trying to pressure him on the interior. Do you think this is a game where we see like a TJ Sanders, who's been around a lot of big plays but hasn't been able to make one yet? Do we see a TJ Sanders step up? Is this a big Deion Walker game? Does Daquan Jones factor in with some interior pressure? What do you think the Bills are going to do to try to bring pressure on Drake?
They're going to not bring pressure.
I'm gonna disagree, but go ahead.
No. And I'll say this: they're gonna not bring pressure if Joey Bosa is not good to play for this one. He's been battling a hamstring and a wrist thing. If he plays, then the Bills have a good chance of bringing pressure and bringing Drake May down. They got him four times in the previous meetup, and that pass rush was not kind of gangbusters for their season average, right? Like that they didn't have huge pressure rates in that game, but Drake May has taken the most sacks in the league that are his fault of all active quarterbacks. And so that doesn't mean he's taken the most sacks. It just means that of the sacks he's taken, more of them were his kind of misunderstanding where he needed to push. And that I think is second year QB play stuff, right? Like, and he does look awesome in his sense of the pocket. It's just that he still has, that's still something he needs to brush up. So where he moves and where he finds space when he tries to press things later, you know, past the 2 or 3 second mark on a down, is it either ends up being a scramble and awesome, or a, you know, really clutch pass and awesome, or he walks himself into sacks. And so the reason I say the Bills are not going to bring pressure is because their pressure rates from their front four are 32nd of 32 teams over the past 5 weeks. And a lot of that has to do with Joey Bosa being dinged up. The absence of Michael Hoyt, the absence of Ed Oliver, the players they had planned on providing that natural organic pass rush are not on this team right now. So
that was very well reasoned, but all I heard you say was Drake May is a terrible second year QB without pocket presence. Brandon, defend your boy. No.
Is this pardon my take? Like,
no, we're sadly, we don't have their kind of followership or listenership. Brandon, from your serial killer lair, I want you to give me a couple of things. Give me a couple of things to keep in mind here on the defensive side of the ball. So I've got some thoughts on Drake May too that I'm going to weigh in on here in a minute. But like, the advantage of having you come on the pod is that you watch the New England Patriots about as closely as I've ever seen a fan watch another team outside of maybe me and JJ. Defensively, it looks like you guys are going to get Kyrus Tonga back, which is going to be huge for the middle of your defensive line, right? But your squad since week 9 has had a hard time stopping the run. They're giving up on average about 4.5 yards per carry to opposing running backs. And even in that week 5 game, James Cook, while he didn't get to tote the rock a lot, when he did, was hitting his normal efficiency metrics. Do you think the New England Patriots with Tonga back have what it takes to stop the Buffalo Bills run game in a way that's going to force them to go to the air?
So you'll have to tell me what metrics you're referring to, because James Cook on the season had his second worst yards per carry against the Patriots, and that was at home. And so the Bills, who have been not great on the road this season, great at home, not great on the road, going into Gillette Stadium, how does James Cook, you know, right the ship, I think is a bigger question. To your question, yes, I do think the Patriots will have an answer for James Cook the way that they did earlier in the season, even with, you know, the injuries that they've seen.
Yeah. You know, his yards per carry over expected were about his normal rate. His success rate was about average in that game. Like, it really was the turnovers that killed the overall offensive efficiency for the Bills in that first game. And then there were just large stretches, and JJ, we've seen this before, where the Bills just stopped going to James Cook for a while for whatever reason, right? I mean,
often those are the games that the Bills lose. If you look at the games where Cook, you know, gets the opportunities to carry the rock, the Bills are more likely to win in those scenarios.
Oh, 100%. And I think with Tonga back, and with even though Milton's out, you guys still have Barmore, who is on the injury report but looks like he's going to play. I think we're going to attack your guys' edge rushers. They're a little bit lighter on the lighter side. And I think we're going to make Christian Gonzalez and Carlton Davis tackle in space on James Cook. I could see a lot of JJ crack toss anybody in this particular yeah, game.
Crack toss, pin pull, and then the ever amazing motion tight end or Reggie Gilliam motion to the center of the line gap play. Those are all of our favorite things. So, and really the reason, to your point, Brandon, that you see the Bills go away from running with James Cook is when a team shows that they, you know, in a 10 snap sample size have a very strong answer for those six plays. Yeah. The Bills are like, well, you cooked us. I guess yeah. we got to Josh Allen.
Go do something.
Play hero ball.
Back to the yeah. drawing book. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but to, just a real quick question, cause I don't know the answer is Gillette Stadium. Is that a natural or artificial?
Pretty sure that's an artificial turf.
Okay. Damn it. Because I just found this stat and it's fascinating to me. James Cook is 8.6 yards per carry on grass and 4.3 on artificial turf when wow. playing on the road.
Well, that's wild.
That is yeah. fascinating.
That's wild.
So thought that'd be a nice tidbit for this one. But yeah, so the thing about the previous in terms of like matchups and keys to the game, the thing about the early week five game against the Pats was that Bills were, I mean, it was a 3-point victory for the Pats and the Bills lost the turnover battle 3-1. Right. So like it, I think, and they had 11 penalties for 90 yards. The Pats also had 93 yards. So
I
like,
forgot the Sean Hockley game. Oh yeah. God,
so geez. the shot themselves in the foot factor, it looked like vintage Patriots, right? The Patriots are like, okay, make mistake your way into failure. Right. Like, and that has been in the Sean McDermott era, largely the way that he's maintained such success in the division and broadly and in the league year over year in the regular season has been, we're going to play clean football and let other people make mistakes. That was the whole, you know, playbook last year. And so for them to kind of flip the script Uno reverse card on the Bills in week five, it's really a question of who's going to show up to this game for the Bills on Sunday. Is it are they going to shoot themselves? Which team is going to be that team, right? Who's going to make more critical errors? This past Sunday against the Bengals, it was the Bengals, right? Joe Burrow on two consecutive pass plays intercepted, one for a pick six and the other, you know, for a tip turnover that turned the whole game upside down after at one point the Bengals were leading by three scores. So really, I think it's a question of which of these defenses is able to be, you know, is able to take advantage of mistakes. And which of these offenses is able to cash in. And to the previous point, Christian Gonzalez and Carlton Davis are 100% capable of tackling on the outside because that's what they did in week five. That's the best way that they shut down the Bills wide zone running team. Because at that time, the Bills were not really going gap too much. They were really trying that long, wide, spread it out crack toss that requires the safeties, linebackers and CBs to fill and tackle and have discipline in their lanes. And the Patriots showed they were extremely ready for it, which means that with an extra week of preparation on the bye, I don't expect them to show up and kind of puke all over themselves with that job this time around.
You know, there was another thing that because we talk about how the Patriots seem very well prepared for the Bills run game. The other thing that absolutely pissed me off about that week five game was the fact that we let Robert Spillane, who to me is the most annoying New England Patriot. He's slow, like he's big, he's clunky, but they let Spillane run downhill into the line of scrimmage and fill his run fits without any real resistance from this Buffalo Bills squad. I would love to see JJ, the Buffalo Bills, make Spillane play a little bit more horizontal so that he's not there in support of Davis and Gonzalez in those run fits, shutting things down outside the tackles. Like, can we, like the Kansas City Chiefs strategy, can we take advantage of this linebacker core on New England with a little bit of tight end play action, make them play, feel like they need to play more coverage against Knox and Kincaid and free some things up outside the tackles for Cook? That's all I want for Christmas, man. Yeah. And they did it against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
They did it against Cincinnati. Dude, I was at that game. I was in like a spiritual state when I saw early down play action to the tight ends. on behalf of the Buffalo Bills, the thing we've been asking for all year. I think that's going to factor in. Should the New England Patriots be able to shut down some of this run game with James Cook again, right? I want to switch to a couple of things on the offensive side of the ball, JJ. But first, let's let you run through, empty the notebook, anything else about this New England Patriots offense and this Buffalo Bills defense you feel like we need to keep an eye out for here before we start talking about our Lord and Savior, Josh Allen.
You know, I think that the Patriots don't have what anyone would consider like a premier alpha dog wide receiver that the Bills have to really look out for. And that really plays in favor of the Buffalo Bills defense because they do not have Christian Benford is very, very good. They do not have like the premier shutdown corner at this stage for their team. They will mirror the best receiver from the Patriots with Benford. And he has excellent coverage stats over the past three or four games. So really what it becomes, and this is like sounds like such a trope, but it becomes a game of fundamentals. If the Buffalo Bills defense can be sound in tackling, fill where they need to fill, and keep Drake May kind of behind the sticks, we know he can make some magic happen on third and long, and that's where the Bills are kind of, that's the Achilles heel, right? Third and 16 conversions is the thing that everybody seems to be able to get against this defense. But it's also the kind of thing that when the Bills are humming, it's because they're putting teams in those positions and then mistakes are made, right? And so I think the big question becomes, this defense is pretty well lined up in terms of skill, except for pass rush. If they can get any kind of pass rush married with coverage, I think that they have a great shot of stalling or at least frustrating the Patriots. Because all of the metrics would point to that this Patriots offense has been successful, but they've also been winning very close games and they have not, you know, they're not one of the premier top four or five offenses in the league. They need to be methodical, and that's kind of plays into the Bills' strength on defense.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, to your point, JJ, they are 6-2 right now in one score games this season. So yeah, that is that's a metric that's definitely in their favor, but you know, can regress to the mean very, very quickly under the right circumstances. And then before I move on here, give you the last word. Anything else from your point of view that we should be keeping an eye out for as our squad square off this Sunday?
Yeah, I just want to go back to something that JJ just said about there really not being a number one alpha receiver in the Patriots offense. What we have seen is Drake May spreading the ball to whoever's open. When it's not Diggs, you know, Hunter Henry is a very, very reliable option. I can't tell you off the top of my head how the Bills have been against tight ends, but he is a fairly reliable weapon that Drake May seems to go to when the going gets tough.
Brandon, I can answer your question on Bills against opposing tight ends. They're squarely middle of the pack. However, in the games where they have excelled, i.e. Kansas City and shutting down Travis Kelce, they have deployed Cole Bishop exclusively as their tight end eraser, right? This is where you see some of those dime looks and obvious pass situations where you'll get a mix of Jordan Hancock or Cam Lewis with Jordan Poyer, and then Cole Bishop is just attached at the hip of an opposing team's tight end. I think we're probably going to see something similar in this game. Listen, the Bills play a lot of split safety coverage, and Drake May is good against split safety coverage, and the Bills are good at running that defense. It's kind of a strength on strength. I could see them so that they don't have to sacrifice that too high shell that they're likely going to put over Drake May in a lot of passing situations to guard against the deep ball. I could see that being more of a dime look where an extra linebacker comes off the field, and then you get Cole Bishop lined up at the line of scrimmage with Hunter Henry. JJ, is that off, or would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, and I would say that over the last seven games, the Bills have given up one touchdown to a tight end, so it's not a position that's really killing them right now. There have been years in the past where the stats sort of have been weighed a little bit heavier because of playing against the Ravens and the Chiefs, but the Bills, you know, their poor defense against tight ends has been far improved this year.
Yeah, it's definitely been on the upswing since Jordan Poyer came back, since we figured out Shaq Thompson, and like no shade of Terrell Bernard, who we both like, but since he's been injured, just the performance overall of the spine of that defense in the middle of the field against opposing tight ends has been improved as well. So, yeah. All right. Or not Benford. Yeah, no, I said Bernard. Yeah. All right. All right, guys. Awesome thoughts. Got another question I want to tee up for you guys. The Bills, let's say the Bills win, right? Here's my question. Is it going to matter in the grand scheme of the division? I mean, the Patriots hold all the tiebreakers. After this game, we only have three games left in the season. The Bills will be at Cleveland and then home for Philly, home for the Jets. And I could see the Bills easily dropping one of those games. Hint, hint, I think it's probably Cleveland. Myles Garrett and that run defense. The Pats have the Ravens, who look like a shell of themselves. Then they are at the Jets, and then they are at home against the Dolphins, who, yeah, have given them some fits and starts in the past. But, I mean, JJ, I feel like we're going to need a lot of help here. So, Brandon, I'm going to start with you being the guest here. Let's say the Bills win, right? Give me your percentage of confidence that you feel like the Pats still walk away the division this year.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's been a lot of skepticism and negative talk surrounding the Patriots recently because of the strength of their schedule this season. And so this game is going to, I think, answer a very important question of like whether there's any validity to that. Is this fool's gold or is it the real thing? So I think I'm still fairly confident. And a lot of that confidence comes from Vrabel and what Vrabel has been able to do this season and absolutely turning this team around. I would say I'm still, 75% confident, that the Patriots can get it done.
Nice. JJ, what about you? Bills, assuming the, let's say the Bills win this Sunday, confidence rating in them taking the division.
It's funny because we were in this situation a few years ago where the Dolphins had 10 wins and the Bills were 6-6. And, so being, that many wins down, I felt more confident farther back from the Dolphins than I do this far back from the Patriots.
It's
because
the
Dolphins are absolute clown shoes. And have always been, and Tua is not a real quarterback as far as I'm concerned.
Because he's left-handed.
He's not. He's left-handed. He's short. He's not very athletic. He doesn't have, when he doesn't have Tyreek Hill or somebody else that he can just chuck it up to, he looks completely average or below average, right? Like, and so their entire offense right now is just throwing quick outs to Devon Achane. Like, that tells me all I need to know. This Patriots team is like a real competitor as far as I can tell, and I'm not believing all this schedule hype because it's the NFL. The margins are incredibly tight. The worst team in the league and the best team in the league are not that far apart. They're usually just a few key pieces apart, one of them always being a quarterback, right? And so for me, it's like, okay, Bills win this one, then they're counting on winning out plus the Patriots dropping one to the Jets or the Dolphins, because that is the only way. So I don't have very high confidence. I think that the Bills are sort of shooting for a top seeding of fifth, to take on hopefully the winner of the AFC North. Cause I think that's going to be the most likely favorable outcome.
Yeah. I really want to, I've heard a lot of Buffalo Bills media be like, if the Patriots are the second seed, Bills would be great in the seven seed and knock New England out early. I'm like, I don't know if I want all that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to avoid the six seed too, because I think Jacksonville, if it is them, is going to be pretty good. Like, that's a pretty good team that we can talk about if it comes to it. I mean, reality is my confidence level is at about a 12, even if the Bills win. Bills would have to win out, JJ, to your point. The Pats would have to drop one to the Ravens, drop another one to either the Jets or the Dolphins. And I don't see that happening, right? I just don't see that happening. I think, though, Vrabel is going to have these Patriots so fired up, they're not going to want to back in, quote unquote, to a division championship. They're going to want to knock off the defending champs on their own home turf in New England and make it a real t-shirt and hat party, I think, on Sunday. And that's the goal I think he's going to have them singularly focused on. Yes. God, man, I can't wait to get to game predictions. But yeah,
we have to flip it, right? And I have to ask you guys, if the Bills lose this game, does Bean go? Does Sean McDermott go? You look at how teams have brought in a new head coach this season that's turned things around. Ben Johnson, what he's done with the Bears, right? Just for one example. So do the Bills go that route, given the rhetoric that this window of opportunity for a Bills postseason run seems to be closing? And I guess, you know, the B to that question is, do you put any stock in that rhetoric that's been going around that this window is closing, that Josh Allen's prime is going to come to an ending soon?
Man, it's almost like you've got a lot of Bills friends that talk about this stuff regularly. It's weird because I want to take this bait, but I will say, I think the decision to move on from any of the coaching staff is excluded for me from whatever happens in this game, right? I'm slightly more optimistic about a long view. I mean, listen, I think the Patriots have played really, really well. When I look at the underlying metrics, though, and I look at some of the things they really struggle with, like the offensive line, when I look at how weak the spine of that defense is, right? And now the fact that they're not going to get a top four pick next year, they're probably going to be picking more in the late 20s or early 30s. I think it's going to be harder to address those holes in the long run. And next year, they're going to have a first place schedule. Like, they're going to play the Texans, right? They're going to play the Chiefs. They're going to play the Broncos. And I think, let's say they finish 15-2, they could very well end up making personnel decisions that make them better. But I think because of the one score games and some of these underlying metrics in the long view, they regress back to the mean and they could be a 10 or 11 win team next year. And to me, that still primes the Bills to be able to compete for the division. So I think Sunday, Brandon, to your original question, isn't defining for me as a window closing, even though I know that's what the media narrative is going to be. I'm more high on the Bills long view because of the way Allen is playing right now. Now, to your question about moving on from the coaching staff, I will tell you there are a lot of Bills fans that think after 13 seconds, we should have done that no matter what. I'm going to say something that's going to be absurd. If the Bills win the Super Bowl, I think we should jettison both Brady and Babich no matter what and start over at the coordinator position. Because if the Bills make a run to the Super Bowl, it's going to be because of Josh Allen doing some Superman stuff. And it's not going to be all of a sudden because Brady figured out how to creatively scheme for wide receivers and open up the passing game, or Babich figured out how to call plays. You know what I mean? I think it is on the table. Even if the Bills reach the height of their success, there are massive shakeups amongst this coaching staff to extend that window. So, great question. I think the outcome on Sunday, though, is excluded for me from whatever decisions need to happen with the coaching staff. JJ, what about you? Are you going to take that bait?
I won't take that bait because I just don't see that as realistic, knowing what I know about the ownership. And I could see it's like, maybe this is pessimistic of me, but anytime this conversation comes up with any Bills fans that I have in my circle, and I'm like, oh, everybody should go. I absolutely agree with Dan that Brady and Babich, they don't move the needle for me as coordinators. I think they have huge flaws in their scheme and huge flaws in their game planning and their play calling. And so I would love for them to be changed. I don't see McDermott or Bean literally going anywhere unless they turned in a like 5-12 season, like 2 years in a row. And like, I just don't, with Allen, like, I just don't see the ownership team who has gotten the Sabres wrong 4 times going back to the well and trying to get a new coaching staff when they have somebody who won the division five years in a row, has been to the playoffs 6 of 7 seasons, has a generational quarterback, always competitive with in the big moments. I think that they continue to accept whatever rationale or reasoning Bean and McDermott are giving. But I would be hopeful for a change at coordinators. And I don't think that's going to happen in season.
Yeah, no, no way. Not especially not right now. I will say this. Stephon Diggs was right. He was right to force his way out of Buffalo because I don't buy into any of the stuff between him and Josh. I think the relationship probably became a little bit frayed. But I think the reason that he left was because he saw the writing on the wall with the scheme Brady was going to run, what it was going to mean for that wide receiver room and how they would be utilized and what they'd be asked to do. And I think he rightfully took a bet on himself. He's like, I still got gas in the tank. I'm not going to sit here and waste away for the remaining 3 years of this new contract, blocking off the edge, so, like chipping Will Anderson off the edge so James Cook could get an extra 3 yards. You know what I mean? And Brandon, I think you guys have been the benefit of that because you've gotten the best version of Diggs, not just on the field, but off the field. I mean, the past couple of games, he's not been targeted at a very high rate, the Cincy game and the Giants game. Yet he has been saying all the right things, motivating that team. You can see him active on the sideline, saying the right things in the locker room. Brandon, how do you feel about the role Stephon Diggs has played with this team this year overall? And is this a guy you want to see return to the squad next year?
Yeah. So if you go back to when you guys had me on before the season started, I had a ton of pessimism around Stephon Diggs. Didn't want him on the team. Don't like the negativity. I didn't like, what was happening during the preseason, right? All that drama. And as a Patriots fan, it's like, oh man, like here we go. Like, you know, we signed up for this. Like now we got to deal with this, childish behavior and a guy who thinks that he's better than everybody else around him. And he's done something very different, right? I think he's done a good job changing some of that reputation that surrounds him, being more of a locker room guy, a more team-oriented individual, and that's translated to a productivity. I like the effort that we see from him. To draw a comparison to some concerns around George Pickens lately and how he's been very lackadaisical on his route running and not really giving a whole lot of effort. I think it's been surprising and refreshing to see Diggs really trying to ball out and get himself open for when May is scrambling, extending the play, and finding himself in the space like he used to do when he was a Buffalo Bill. So it's been pleasantly surprising.
JJ, Stephon Diggs hits the free agent market next year. Do you want the Bills to pick him back up?
He wouldn't come back. He would never sign that deal.
What if Brady's gone? What if Brady is gone?
I don't want them to pick him up, but I also think that that's the only way he would come back. He would consider it. He would never. I don't think he'd ever sign back. And the reason I don't think he would is because it's just one of those things that you just sort of put that chapter behind you. And then the reason I necessarily wouldn't want him is even with a scheme that was way, 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 way more friendly to outside wide receivers under Daboll, Stephon Diggs was absolutely ineffective and disappeared in major games in the playoffs repeatedly. He was too easy to erase when they needed him. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Bean would necessarily be as excited about it either.
Yeah, yeah. I think between the two of us, I've always been the bigger Stephon Diggs fan, and this is something I would definitely entertain in a revamped build out of the room. He wouldn't be the only guy I'd want to bring in, but I could see him have a meaning. Like, listen, everyone says you guys need an X, you need an X. We've been at our most successful, and Josh's has been at his most successful when we've had that Z wide receiver position all filled out. I think of John Brown, right? I think of Emmanuel Sanders playing that role a lot. You know, I mean, that's when Josh has been his most successful, when he's got a guy that can operate on the field side and in space and get separation. So, the ESPN 30 for 30 is going to be wild if Josh Allen ends up Dan Marino and never wins a Super Bowl. And a big reason that we historically track back as to why that happened is because the Buffalo Bills could not keep the Diggs-Allen thing going because they wanted to roll with Joe Brady. who may be 2 years and done. It's just, it's going to be crazy. That's going to be crazy. All right. Brandon, this is where you can gloat unapologetically. I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk about kind of QBs. Listen, regardless of what happens on Sunday, we're going to see a really great, entertaining matchup between two of the league's best QBs as they're playing right now. And with the emergence of May this season, it gives us the opportunity to kind of revisit, I think, conventional wisdom around the quarterback tiers in this league. There has been a top four for what feels like forever as far as the elite of the elite. You've got Allen, Mahomes, Jackson, and Burrow, in whatever order you want to put it in. Brandon, where does Drake May currently sit in that pantheon of QBs? Would you insert him into the top four, or is he somewhere still just on the outside looking in?
Really, really tough question. And I feel like it's a tough question because Drake May's in his sophomore season and really only played half a season last year with a different head coach. So I think there's a lot to be found out. However, you know, he seems to be the real deal, you know, so I would put him top four. I think that's fair.
Oh, all right. So who are you moving out of that tier? You've got Allen, Mahomes, Jackson, and Burrow. And if you want this podcast ratioed, tell us why it's Allen.
I think Burrow is probably the easiest one on the chopping block here when we're talking about.
I didn't think you were going to go there.
Okay. Yeah, who's going to sort of slip out of that elite, you know, sort of S tier category. And I don't just mean injury wise. I just think that the situation that Burrow's in is not a great one when you look at some of the financial decisions that the Bengals have made, where they have most of their money clustered, and the deficit that you see being very prevalent in other areas of the field. That's how he got hurt, right? Is because there was zero protection for him. Okay, so what? You have T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, two of the best wide receivers, incredible athletes. You know, if you're sacked after 1.5 seconds, like that's not really enough time for those guys to get open. So I if anyone's going to fall off, it's going to be Joe Burrow, in my opinion.
Nice. JJ, what about you? Where are you putting Drake May here in the current pantheon of QBs?
Now, hang on, young whippersnapper is kind of what that's the colon subtitle I'd put under Drake May. Because like, I think that, you know, if you've listened to the pod, I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's an excellent talent. I think that, you know, early in the season, all of the tongue in cheek, like baby Josh Allen stuff, when he would like break out of an absolute sure sack and run for 30 or 40 yards was fun. And I think he has those skills. He's got great arm talent. He's a better anticipatory thrower than Josh Allen was in his second year for sure. He's got a better deep ball right now than Josh Allen has right now.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of really, really good skills there that I see. And I've said this with so many different players, consistency is what makes superstars, right? Like he has to show that this isn't just a flash in the pan, that he can build a season on season, even if he just has another season where he's considered an MVP level talent. I think that then I'm happy to square him right away in the top four.
I think his legacy is going to be defined by how well this team drafts moving forward, because the Patriots have been notoriously bad at drafting. Except for this past year, where I think they did an exceptional job picking up Campbell, Henderson, Kyle Williams in the first three rounds. And we have not yet seen the Kyle Williams breakout, but I, as a fan, have a lot of hope in the two of them building chemistry together over time and what that's going to look like. But yeah, how Vrabel drafts in the next couple of years, I think, is going to tell a big part of Drake May's story.
My advice would be, especially if you guys are picking in the low 20s, high 30s, trade that first round pick and a little bit of future draft capital for Justin Jefferson, and then you just won't have to worry about it. And Drake May will be immediately top five. Yep. You mentioned the deep ball accuracy, JJ. I mean, his completion percentage on throws of 28 plus yards is like 51.6%. It's tops in the league. And not just that it's statistically pretty, but like when you watch him on film, that deep ball, it sure is pretty. Here is the most wild stat about Drake May, and I can't believe we're saying this about a second year QB. Tight window throws. He's only squeezing in to tight windows on about like 16% of his throws. It's like 15th in the league. His completion percentage on tight window throws is 52%. The next closest guy is 10 points lower than him. There's a reason tight window throws are so difficult to complete. And his completion percentage on tight window throws get better the further down the field he is throwing the ball. I think that's a bit of a vulnerability for him too. And we saw Cincy start to squeeze some of those passing windows for him, and that's how they ultimately ended up generating a pick with him, right? But I think there's some vulnerability there. But until opposing DBs start changing their footwork discipline and start playing the ball and the ball path more and the man less, it's really, really difficult for me not to put May in at least the top like six right now. Like the top 15 QBs by QBR, Dak Prescott, who on or off depending on his injury rate, but he's having a magnificent year this year. Jordan Love, who goes unconscious for seven games a year, but then the other 10, you kind of wonder if he should be a pro QB. Then you've got Drake May. We've got Mahomes. I'm not writing off Mahomes in the decline, but that deep ball stuff, that tight window stuff we just talked about, May, has been absent from Mahomes' game for 3 years. And this was the year it was supposed to come back because they've got all their weapons, and it just hasn't happened. Then you've got Matt Stafford, who is going to play for as long as Philip Rivers will continue to play in this league. Stafford's probably going to play till like he's 57. Then you've got Allen, then Jackson Dart, Sam Darnold. I'm not taking Drake May. I'm not taking anyone other than Drake May at maybe number like five or six, right? I just think he's there. Like Stafford, it's the age thing. And then with Jordan Love, the consistency is not there for me. I would easily put Drake May right now above those two guys.
Yeah, no, I the talent is there. You've backed up your argument with validity. Consistency is what matters to me in these types of rankings and conversations.
Right. And next year, I think, again, will be key as we revisit this conversation, because regression to the mean, it just happens for everybody, right? Be it a one score game, be it deep ball percentage, tight window throws. We'll see, but I mean, dude, you watch it on film and the layers of throws that only Josh really had for a long time, Drake May's got for sure.
Passes the eyeball test for sure.
Oh my God, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. All right. Prediction sure to go wrong, guys, as we wrap this thing up. The Bills, for whatever reason, are favored by 1.5. This line shrunk to 1 and then went back to 1.5. I don't understand this at all. And then the over-under on this game is 49.5. Brandon, you first. Give us your score prediction for this game.
Okay, so like I said earlier, the Bills have not been great on the road. I think the Patriots are going to, like you said, make this a t-shirt and hat party early. So I'm going to give this one to my team, the Patriots. With a final score, I'm going to say 29-27.
Brandon, I didn't expect that. No, that's, yeah, that's a pretty good pick. Oh, 29-27. So you've got the Patriots winning outright, and you have the over on the score, which I think is interesting too. Nice. I like that.
This is going to be a close game. And I think the NFL made a huge mistake not flexing this into a primetime slot.
I agree.
Huge mistake. And I think seeing, you know, two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL going at it, that absolutely should be a primetime game. So and I think potentially the birthing of a renewed rivalry between our two teams as we watch the very entertaining dissolution of the Kansas City Chiefs and just relish in their pain and their suffering. I think that is the table that the three of us come together and share a meal on, right? Is watching what is happening to the Chiefs. It's chef's kiss.
I will always break bread over the Kansas City Chiefs being terrible.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you guys want to jump on, you know, one of these calls with a beverage the day that the Chiefs are eliminated from playoffs contention, I'm there 100%.
It could be Sunday, right? Yeah. If the Bills win, the Jags win, Houston wins, and Kansas City loses to the Chargers, then they're out. I think the Chargers and the Chiefs are in the 1 o'clock window too. So Arizona, Houston's in the 1 o'clock window. When do the Jags play? The Jags are in the 1 o'clock window too. It could all be happening at the same time.
Yeah.
So Brandon, this is the reason why you shouldn't want the Patriots to clinch the division yet, because if all of those things happen, we'd be celebrating something I think far greater than t-shirts and hats, and that would be the downfall of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
Brandon, do you want to change your prediction? You have that opportunity.
No.
Stick with it. Stick with it.
Sorry. Yeah. It's just what I feel in my heart. So
nice. All right, cool. All right, JJ, what about you?
You know, I think that what we saw from the Bills in the Cincinnati game this past weekend, and granted, snow globe game at home, those are components that always make for a better Josh Allen performance and a better defensive performance for the Bills. I think was a team that was a little bit more consistent and aligned with playing four quarters of football hard, doing their 1/11th as it were. And they were in that game with some injury, you know, issues there, and they look to be getting a little bit healthier for this one. I actually see the Bills winning on the road. They're 3-3 on the road, as Brandon mentioned. It hasn't been the best thing for them. But in the games that they did win on the road this season, they had 26, 30, and 40 points. And so they can kind of turn it on in some of those opportunities. I think that the Bills, it's going to be close. It's going to be, you know, a cardiac affair in the fourth quarter. And I like Josh Allen when the chips are down over Drake May, just because he's a much younger quarterback. Bills 34, Pats 31, and I do think it hits the over.
Nice. I'm gonna go, I really went back and forth about this too. Vrabel is 6-0 coming out of the bye as a head coach, and he has had some really good moments against Sean McDermott when Vrabel was in Tennessee. I believe in Josh. I don't necessarily believe in a whole lot of other things on this Bills squad right now, but I believe in Josh in December. And just on that alone, non-analytical, purely emotional, purely vibe-driven thing, I'm going to say Bills 24, Patriots 21. I am going to take the under. Division games are weird. They're always weird. They're rarely high-scoring affairs unless it's a blowout on one side. So I am going to take that. I think both of these teams play with an edge. I think the lackadaisical energy that the Bills came out with in week 5 will not be a problem this time around, but I think the Patriots are going to be up and equal to meeting that. I could see this going either way, but I'm going to lean Bills just because, you know, I want to keep the podcast and keep people happy. So there you go. Any prop bets from you gentlemen? JJ, we'll start with you.
So I'm going to say over under a half interception by Drake May. He's been very good at protecting the ball, but he has been occasionally, you know, when they come in bunches.
He's thrown six. Like he's thrown six this year. And again, we talked about the one he threw with Cincinnati. Is Benford going to play? Benford was in a boot today at practice. That's not good. He had some practice related injury. I'm going to say over. And here's the reason why. I mentioned those tight window throws. I was at that Cincinnati game. Spectacular game to be at, by the way. Just absolutely incredible.
I'm so jealous.
And I got an up close and personal look at one Maxwell Hairston, who was baptized by T. Higgins in this game. All right. Mad Max did not have his best moments in this game. But what I saw out of him was a kid who is sticky in coverage, just needs to change up his footwork a little bit, and needs to play passing lanes against some of these bigger wide receivers like a Matt Collins, like a Kayshon Booty. And listen, there were a couple of picks that Mad Max could have had he chosen to play the ball and not the man. I think Drake May loves to thread into tight windows. And I think McDaniel's scheme gives May a lot of quick answers to what the Bills are going to do. So it's going to come down to winning your man-to-man matchups. And I'm confident that Mad Max can. I'm going to say Drake May throws one pick. I'm going to say it goes to Mad Max, who did not play in week 5. And I think will be a factor in this game. Brandon, what about you? Over under that pick?
Yeah, coming off the bye, you know, against Buffalo, I think May is going to be hyper-fixated on protecting the ball. I think if there's tight coverage, he's going to look to Henderson for the check down plays. And, you know, he hasn't thrown a lot of interceptions this season. So I'm going to say take the under.
Nice. So zero. It's a clean game out of May. May had no touchdowns, but no interceptions in that first game against the Bills. And it was somehow still the most impressive zero touchdown game I've ever seen in my life in week 5. It was really incredible. Brandon, what about you? Prop bets?
Ooh, okay. This is one I always like to do with you guys. Josh Allen over or under 20, I'm going to say 28 rushing yards.
Over. Over. He might get that in one run in this game.
Yeah, but don't the Patriots play a lot more zone and mixed coverage, which means that they're defensive backs are looking at the quarterback. I don't know, Dan. I mean, okay, but it is Josh Allen in December.
So the Patriots are playing man only at a 27% clip right now, which is just above the league average. So they're playing way more zone for sure. I will say the way that teams have been and the way that the Patriots limited Josh's rushing lanes in that first game is to have like a linebacker spy. But Spillane appears on the injury report. And again, I've already told you how I feel about his sideline to sideline speed. I think 30 yards would be a very attainable goal for Josh in this particular game. And the designed run game, which never features in October and November, is going to feature in this game, I would imagine.
So on the season, he has 5 games with 30 or less so far.
So I'm sticking with under because I think that the focus for the Bills is going to be getting the ball out of his hands to other players more than kind of I don't know if we see a lot of design runs by Josh unless it's short yardage tush push stuff.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty confident about my over. I'll text you both in the most obnoxious way. I be correct about this?
Yes. Perfect.
All right, here's my prop bet. And it starts with a fun stat. Did you know the Buffalo Bills have scored over 61 points in their last 2 games? And in that stretch, wide receivers have accounted for only 11 catches between those 2 games and 102 yards. Yeah, I mean, wide receivers are purely optional in this offense. So
they're just window dressing.
They really just are. They're just extensions of the offensive line in this absurd scheme, this ridiculous scheme. All right, but here's what I'm going to do. Wide receiver catches in this game, over, under 5.5. The wide receivers. All the wide receivers in the past 2 games have only caught the ball 11 times.
That's such a low bar.
Yeah.
I have to take the
over.
But
they've only caught the ball 11 times in 2 games.
I have to take the over on that.
That's a sucker's bet. I'm going under. Joe Brady hates wide receivers.
So that's so funny. Brandon over. I'm taking the over just because like that's such a tiny number. And on top of that, I can see that, and here's why you're wrong there.
Okay. Because Keon Coleman's going to have a good game.
No, absolutely not. We know what I think about Keon Coleman.
I know. I'm just baiting you.
He's the window dressing of all window dressings. He just looks the part. He can't do the part. No, but I can see Khalil Shakir getting a lot more scrubby, like middle of the field or swing, you know, swing screens in this game, even though we thought that they'd abolished it last game. I can see Khalil Shakir getting more of those, even though I have seen Ty Johnson has been getting those whip screens a lot more, which I think is a good change. Just another thing to a running back. But I think it's over five catches total across, because I think that the Patriots are going to try to focus on shutting down tight ends and running backs.
And here's the thing with the Patriots. I think that is a real demonstrable weakness that I don't know they've got a schematic answer for. Because for them, the safety personnel is what it is. The linebacker personnel is what it is, right? Yeah. Like the spine of that defense in the middle of that field is absolutely open. Even Marcus Jones, who is wildly successful slot corner. He's like 5'8". I mean, you're telling me you don't like Dawson Knox or Dalton Kincaid on that guy? But this is the I'm not just talking crazy. I'm not just throwing Brady shade out there. Like, the leader in targets the last time these guys played was Dalton Kincaid, and everyone should argue that he should have gotten more. What we saw happen against the Bengals, where the Bills went play action on 57% of Josh's dropbacks, and they targeted tight ends on 96% of those. That is the passing offense that Joe Brady's been waiting to run, and to great effect. That's why he's been building up 13 personnel, these 12 personnel packages, so that when Kincaid got healthy, he could roll out Knox and Kincaid in some of those patterns, and to a lesser extent, Jackson Hawes. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we've seen Ty Johnson and James Cook both more active in the past game too. I think the pecking order for targets is going to be Kincaid, Knox, Cook, Ty Johnson, then Khalil Shakir. And Khalil Shakir is not getting five catches in this game. I can't remember the last time he had a five catch game. So that's it. That's also, it just happens to be the way that you can best attack this particular defensive unit as well. Cause I don't want to go up against Davis or Gonzalez with any of our wide receivers, do you?
No. Yeah. Especially not with Grape Davis or Keon Coleman not able to attack the ball when it's in the air, right? Like, they both just watch as people pick it off.
Oh my God, it's terrible. So I get where you're both at, but I'm taking the under.
Okay.
I'm taking the under. Yeah, absolutely. All right. That was fun. Marks. I mean, really good stuff. Really good stuff there, particularly at the end. Way to bring it home, guys. All right, Brandon, thank you for joining us. We always appreciate you having you on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. JJ, nice to welcome you back as well. It's good to be doing this again with you, sir. For all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. See our faces and Brandon's Kill Room on YouTube. Listen to us on Apple and Spotify. Nice. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.